Beautiful, we're on.
Okay.
Laura, you missed part of the talk. I forgot to start recording it, but you're on now. you can talk to them about this next week. So we've just talked about the four Zen insights: no self, no separation, emptiness. Everything is empty. Emptiness is form. Form is emptiness. And everything is right now. So what science might say about the first one, is there a self? So something to ask yourself is, when did this self pop in? Did it pop in before you were born, at conception? Did it pop in while your cells were multiplying in the womb and we're differentiating into the different organs of your body? Did it pop in somehow at birth? Or somehow did it pop in later on as you grew? And we all know it pops in, or that we have it, not that it pops in, that we have this sense of self. And if you look at a two-year-old, you really know that a person has a sense of self, because they're like, mine, mine. You ever see them fight? Mine, mine. So scientists have devised a very interesting experiment called the mirror test to see whether or not and when this sense of self is there. And they've done it for humans and also non-humans. So what they do is, when the person's not aware, they put a little ribbon or something on their face and they don't know what's there. And then show them their image in the mirror, and if they know that that image, that form is them, they'll go and take it off. So they do this to babies, and babies don't get it. It's 2-month-old, they don't get it. 6-month-old don't get it. And it's almost universal. At about a year of age, they'll look in the mirror, and they'll go over, oh, they see that image in the mirror, and it's them. So, they know, the scientists would say, yeah, you do have a sense of self, but it develops as your brain develops, because your brain is able to produce these abstract thoughts about self. And interestingly, there are only a few other species that can pass this test. Sometimes, great apes, dolphins, they do it in a mirror underwater, and there's an elephant in the Bronx Zoo that passed it. Not too long ago, a few years ago. So, you know, why it came about? Well, you can speculate. There are evolutionary psychologists that speculate at how this human ability came about. But basically, you can imagine you need to have a sense of self and other to survive, and in human society in particular. No separation is the second one. So this one, I think, is sort of, we all have heard this before, but our bodies are made of cells, right? And it's all cells. And those cells primarily are atoms of the elements carbon, hydrogen, and oxygen. And those atoms are made up of yet smaller particles, subatomic particles, electrons, photons, inside the nucleus, or neutrons and protons. And there are other rather weird particles scientists have found. So we're made of all these particles of the universe. So scientists would say, yeah, there's no separation. So it's pretty clear. The other thing, which is really interesting, is we have a sense of, this is my body. You know, this is me, this is you. But when something goes wrong in the brain, it can get weird. People have had senses, because there's a problem cognitively in their brain, that their arm isn't their arm, or their hand is a foreign agent, and it really drives them crazy. People have had their arm amputated for that reason. Because they think, and it's a brain disease, it's not anything, it's a brain disease. The other thing they do is they have experiments where they can make you think that that arm is your arm because you're looking at they devise these experiments. And in the future, virtual reality is going to blow your mind because you're going to be able to do that. And you're going to think that you're in there because that you this form that you normally have just here is in there. So they would absolutely agree. There's, you know, the idea of no separation. So let's see. Emptiness. So this one, they would say, oh, it's everything is empty of meaning other than what your abstract thoughts put into it. So we create the meaning in our minds about ourselves and the universe around us. I mean, that really is our life, is the life we create. But they would say it's simply neurons firing. Simply neurons firing, the scientists would say. And right now, the idea of right now, they might say, well, past is simply an abstract idea. Present, future, they're abstract ideas that we have. But in reality, it's only right now. And scientists actually practice that because their experiments are always right now, and they always change depending on what happens right now. So what they know now may be different in the future, and a good scientist will get that. So I want to check the time here, so we don't go because I still good. We've got time, lots of time. So the question that I have is that I've asked myself is realizing the Zen paradox, is it somehow beyond science, beyond the material world? And if you look at one of the main Zen practices, which is what we did today, which is Zazen, it's really about allowing your mind to rest. And interesting, the scientists have found a network of interacting brain regions. It's called the default mode network. They call it default mode because it's by default, it's always on. It's always active. It's always lit up because they do brain scans and they can see that these brain regions are constantly active, connecting with one another. And what they believe is this is the neurological basis for the sense of self. This is how, as our brain develops, this is where it comes. This is what they believe. This is what they think. Because it lights up when thinking about the self, when they do these experiments and they're scanning the brain. When we're thinking about others or stories we have about ourselves and others or social evaluations, or the past and future. So it's always lit up. So we always have that going. That's the thing. There are a couple times when it really quiets down. And you can maybe guess that one time is when indeed they've scanned the brains of meditators while they're in experienced meditators in deep meditation. And they found it quiets down then. And also when someone is very highly focused on a task, that brain, those interacting brain regions quiet down. So it seems like, you know, the Zen Buddhists have been onto something that the science is only just beginning to see. So why does a quiet mind help in a Zen realization? Is it some kind of magical thing that comes in? And so I would suggest what science might say is that we're only conscious of a small part of what goes on. So we're not conscious of our internal organs, for example, unless something goes wrong and then we, ah! But normally we don't know what's happening. Another example is, as you're looking at me, you can see my face now, the neurons at the back of your brain in the visual cortex are firing and creating that image that eventually goes to your prefrontal cortex that give you the conscious sense of seeing. So there are examples of neurons firing, but you're not conscious of it. So why can't there be parts of the brain that function without conscious awareness, yet can break through to the conscious part? That's what I would say and I ask. And in fact, I'm going to suggest we've all had that experience, and it's called intuition. And intuition is the ability, this is right out of the dictionary, the ability to understand something immediately without the need for conscious reasoning. It's just neurons firing. The unconscious is neurons firing, and the conscious, it's just we have that awareness, that thing. So realizing the Zen paradox is not based on some non-material realm, but it requires the conscious mind to become less active to allow intuition to better kick in. It requires a confidence to dwell in the unknown, to be okay with the mystery, the paradox. And that is actually another pillar of Zen practice, is the idea of not knowing. It's being comfortable with not knowing. These thoughts coming in and out, we all do this. We all want to like, oh, I don't like that. Let me figure it out, you know, and then we just get more and more involved. So in a lot of Zen centers, what they say is, and some Zen teachers, in particular this one Korean Zen teacher, says, only don't know. That's his thing, only don't know. You know, it's that little short Korean guy. Only don't know. But it's true. It's good to just dwell in that mystery, that the unknown. Because there's no way for us to know it. It's the neurons firing, but it hasn't gotten into our conscious awareness. So it requires not having angst over the origin of our thoughts. For this would be like fretting over not being aware of our kidneys as they filter our blood. And in Zen, the practice is, you know, having that not knowing mind. So, I hope that this has been helpful for your practice, because that's really what it is, and I haven't gotten you too confused about things. And Lori always asks, or always likes to have a koan involved, so I'm going to give you a koan, but it won't be like a koan from... Blue Cliff Record, or one of those sources. Thank you, Dan.
Sure.
So it's a koan right now. So the Dharma talk is concluded, and we're going to have questions afterwards and comments, whatever you like. So I ask, is it the end or the beginning? Thank you.
Thank you.
So any comments or questions about this crazy science thing that you normally don't hear in a Dharma talk? Yes.
I didn't think it was crazy at all. I liked it very much. Would you say again about intuition? That was an interesting thing, that when the mind is quiet, then the unconscious is able, the unconscious taps into the conscious mind, and that's what we...
Yeah, but intuition is
intuition.
Yes.
That's what it's.
Yes.
Oh, that's
yes.
A nice way to think about it,
yeah.
Isn't it?
Right.
So sometimes intuition is knowing something that you didn't know you knew.
Right. Yeah, that's an excellent way of putting it. Very, very direct. I like that.
Well,
Oh, Marty, thanks so much. We really appreciate your comments. And on intuition, I once read that Daniel Kahneman book, Thinking Fast, Thinking Slow.
You know,
He won the Nobel Prize. He says intuition is a really rapid reasoning. So he thinks it comes from a place of intelligence, could be unconscious intelligence, but it's just super fast.
Okay.
And so it kind of escaped the normal thinking mechanisms.
Okay.
Yeah, ever since I've read that, I've learned to trust my intuition much more.
Oh, great.
But
yeah.
It's similar to what you're saying, just another way.
Another way of looking at it, right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Ben.
With regard to intuition, there's a drawing exercise. It's called intuitive drawing. And in my particular example, you just take a paintbrush with black paint. You can use any color paint. And you stand back from the easel, and then you sort of attack the easel. And in 30 seconds, you just make marks. Then you back away, right?
Yeah.
You take a moment, and then you attack the easel again, and you just make a bunch of marks.
Right.
And you could do this 3 or 4 different times.
Right.
Then you step away and you sort of analyze what is it that you have on the sheet of paper or on the canvas. And then you can sit down and you can make sort of squares to see maybe there's a section of this particular mishmash that really has form to it. And then you can cut that out. And you look at another little section and you can cut that out. And then the little cut out sections actually become the form for another abstract painting.
Oh.
And sometimes I'm amazed at what comes out of this intuitive drawing exercise.
Right.
Almost you didn't think that you were drawing something that actually had form, but in the end, it does.
Right.
So you're kind of going from emptiness to form, form to emptiness.
There you go.
Thank you.
Okay, anyone else? So, how do we end this, Dominic?
Maybe it's the beginning.
Maybe it's the beginning.
Deja vu.
Deja vu. We are going to end with the four view, roles of the Bodhisattva.
Sentient beings are numberless. I am to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I am to transform them. Practice paths are boundless. I am to study them. The enlightened way is incomparable. I am to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them. Practice paths are boundless. I vow to study them. The enlightened way is incomparable. I vow to embody it. Sentient beings are numberless. I vow to free them. Delusions are inexhaustible. I vow to transform them. Practice paths are boundless. I vow to study them. The enlightened way is incomparable. I vow to embody it.
Sentient. Well, thank you, everyone. That was great.
Thank you, Mark.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And I always like to remind everyone there's a Dharma box if you want to donate anything. It's great. Anyone out for coffee this morning?
Yeah, sure.
Oh, great.
Yeah.
Any suggestions as to where to go?
Hey, Marty, I didn't meet these new guys.
Oh,
that's,
oh, great idea, Jen. Yeah.
I'm
sorry. So now, Lori would have taken care of that in the beginning.
Right,
yeah.
But
yeah.
Is it the beginning or the end?